This is Christy Lomax, and you're listening to One Track Mind. Tonight, my special guest is Miss Gretchen Parlato, a singer whose career has been steadily on the rise since she hit the international jazz scene in 2005. She's here tonight to talk about her new album out on Oblique Sound called In a Dream. But as you'll hear, Gretchen also works outside the boundaries of that genre and is able to put a really, really cool spin on some R&B classics. So before we get into our conversation with Gretchen Parlato, let's take a listen to a track she did way back when with DJ Khalil and Self Scientific. Gretchen Parlato, welcome to One Track Mind. How are you doing this evening?
I'm great. Thank you. How are you?
I'm doing really good, really good. So glad you could come in and visit with us. It's been quite some time since you've heard this song, huh?
I know. It's a pleasant surprise, yeah. It reminds me of being in L.A. because this was a little while ago. I was living here when we recorded this.
How did that collaboration come about?
Well, DJ Khalil, we have some mutual friends, and he just, you know, knew about what I did as a singer and just had this track in mind, and, you know, had Stefan Harris come and play. So actually Stefan and I weren't recording at the same time, but it's great what Khalil was able to put together. He's awesome.
And it's called Lovebird for... Yeah. those who aren't already familiar. So you said when you were living in L.A., New York is your home right now, huh?
It is. Yeah, I've been there about 7 years almost, creeping up on 7 years, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, but I'm from originally from here, and I lived here my whole life until New York, so I'm definitely considered a Valley girl, a Cali girl, you know.
I was going to say, as a person who calls themselves a Valley girl for life.
That's right.
Wind up on the mean streets of New York,
although
not so mean anymore. New York is actually my hometown. So,
okay. So we just switched then.
We just switched. How are you feeling, New York?
It's good. You know, I think people that know me definitely, when I say I'm from California, they're like, oh, yeah, yeah, you have that, you know, California kind of laid back energy. They're usually a little surprised that I'm from the Valley because I'm a little more, you know, low-key than normal Valley girls.
The stereotype.
The 80s,
yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think it's nice to kind of bring that energy into New York because New York will always be the craziness and, you know, the hustle and the challenge of it. But if you can, from, you know, yourself and your inside just come at it with a nice, relaxed, you know, mentality, then it makes it a lot easier.
I'm so glad you say that because I talk to so many people here who haven't been to New York, but they just feel so intimidated by that energy or just don't think they can handle it. And it's sort of, you know, it can be overwhelming, but you just sort of have to get your footing and then figure out where your flow is.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Mm. And I mean, when I moved there, I knew, you know, maybe five or 10 people really. Mm-hmm. And I just had, you know, luckily a place to stay and just completely dove in, you know, to that city and just went out and went to, you know, people's gigs and jam sessions and, mm-hmm. you know, did the whole networking thing and just met people. And it grew, you know, from a very small place. But, you know, if you're dedicated, then you can make it work. And it becomes, you know, not a challenge. It's a good word, but it has a negative connotation. It's really just an inspiration to be there because you're just completely surrounded by creative people, you know.
Gretchen Parlato setting the all straight.
Yeah.
On New York City. Let me ask you, though, you know, with the success that you had coming off of the competition and everything, why did you sort mm-hmm. of, why did you feel you really needed to move to New York? Mm-hmm. You know, at that point, you could have, you know, still been based here and you'd be traveling wherever. Why change?
I think because of the fact that I was born in L.A., grew up in L.A., specifically in the Valley. I mean, I'd never left the Valley. So I just didn't want to be the kind of person that only knew one thing, really. And as an artist, I think, especially for a jazz singer, jazz musician, any kind of artist, but specifically for jazz, the New York scene is really, it's really like no other place to be. So it's just a good idea for artists to spend some time in New York and know what that feels like to have that kind of energy around. And, you know, I'm probably will come back, you know, to LA at some point when I, you know, when the time is right. But I knew that I had to know what that felt like. I was already 27 when I moved. So it was, you know, already late blooming when I was right out of college. I mean, right out of high school, going into college, I wasn't ready, mm-hmm. you know, to move there. I stayed in LA. So having made that decision early on, by the time I was 27, I just thought, you know, I just have to do this. It's kind of a now or never, you know, decision. And I'm really glad that I did.
It just fed your creativity and sort of pushed you beyond what you thought you were capable of.
It's true. It's one of those things. If, you know, like you mentioned this word fear, I mean, the way to get over that, over your fears is to, it's very cliche, but it's, you know, to face them and to go into that and figure out what's being brought up. What are these issues that are coming up that this energy is coming from, that this fear, this anxiety, this, you know, whatever it is, just kind of face it and realize it and then you kind of become friends with it and then think and realize, oh, it's actually not that bad, you know.
The challenge that you thought was so huge
exactly.
was really nothing at all, right?
No, and it just helps you to evolve and to, you know, grow and transform into being, you know, the best that you can be.
Well, let's backtrack a little bit, sort of. We're going to take a sort of different route to get to the album and talk about the time sort of right before you moved to New York. Just a little bit about when you were actually at the Jazz Institute, Thelonious Monk Jazz Institute. You were there in the jazz performance program, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is certainly going back a ways, but just to give folks who are not familiar with you a little bit of background. So you were accepted into the jazz performance program, the very first vocalist.
Right, yeah.
And so when you are the first of anything, you know, you're sort of like a guinea pig.
Right.
In ways, you know, they're opening this great, you know, there's this huge opportunity or challenge and, you know, you're about to take this journey. And so could you sort of tell that being a jazz vocalist or being a vocalist in the program, that there were challenges and things that they hadn't quite worked out that were being experimented on?
Sure.
On you?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. So it's a 2-year program. Before I attended, they had only had instrumentalists in this program. So they basically choose, musicians, but previously instrumentalists from all over the world and put an ensemble together. And then you study and perform for 2 years. And, you're a band. So it's kind of like a reality show. You know, it's a little dated now, but I used to just, it was like the real world kind of, you know, mentality of like, let's put these strangers together and, you know, put them in a room and close the door and, you know, see what happens. and really what does happen is the same thing that happens on that show. It's any kind of experiment where you have different minded people coming together where there's no leader, you know, there's nobody who has, who's calling the shots. It's everybody kind of trying to work out their own stuff collectively. And so when you have that element and the artistic element on top of that, it really just, you know, can create a lot of issues to iron out, especially because they hadn't had a singer before. There are differences between the way that instrumentalists might learn and the way that singers might learn, and in general, but especially speaking for myself, there's differences in how I would think compared to the instrumentalists, how I would approach music or learn music or be able to execute something or perform. So there were just some issues of like you said, this guinea pig thing of like never having that kind of energy and figuring out, how do we all end up speaking the same language when maybe we haven't come from the same place, you know?
Could you give just a brief example on what that would be like with how you're thinking versus someone playing a traditional instrument?
Yeah. For example, there's plenty of times where an assignment would be to write some original piece of music. So maybe we had an overnight to do that. And for a lot of the other guys, that's no problem. For me, that was terrifying. I was like, wait, you want me to write a song overnight and arrange it for 7 other instruments? And I, you know, these are things that I didn't know how to do. Mm-hmm. And I still would need help from, you know, now in doing that. But maybe something like that where it was just, I would have to spend a lot more time, you know, than other people would. Or if someone brought a piece of music in and they were like, all right, we want to play through this chart. This is, here it is. And you, bam, you got the music in front of you. You've got to sight read it. You've got a solo on the changes. So it's like for an instrumentalist, it's pretty easy to do. For me, maybe for other singers, they could sight read quickly and see changes and hear changes. But for me, it was like, oh, man, okay. You know, and I a lot of what I do is actually I rely on my ear. I mean, I've studied music and I can read music and, you know, have a basic understanding of things. But really, to be honest, it's so much is just I hear it and I can sing it back and learn it that way. So that's, you know, I created my own method of saying, okay, let me get the music a little bit ahead of time, work on it, you know, hear the changes and learn the melody, learn everything kind of inside out. And then I'd be, you know, at the same place that they would be, you know, eventually. So it's just, but you know, however, whatever method you have, whatever makes it work, to me, the end result is that's the whole point is, you know, what's actually being produced at the end of the day, and do we speak the same language? Can we have a conversation? You know,
and how much of your style, the way that you sing, the way that you're known for singing now, was present even back then, or is this now, you know, the result of more fine tuning, or just a completely different shift, mind shift about how you sing?
I think I came into it with pretty much the same sound that I have now when I started the Monk Institute. But what was really fine-tuned was the because I was a singer among a couple other horns. So there was a saxophone and trombone and myself. So we were kind of the front line, you know, along with playing with guitar and piano and bass and drum. So there were times that I would sing a melody and have lyrics and play a more traditional role as a vocalist. But then there were times that I was singing in harmony with the horn. So I had to figure out what do I need to do to shape my voice to match the same kind of tone and texture as the trombone. And that might be different than how I would apply that to singing along with saxophone or even with piano or guitar. So it was really shaping and realizing that as a vocalist, we can really, with the changing the vowel sound, changing the consonant, changing the resonance how our voice resonates in our own body, can change the sound and the tone of the note. So that was really, you know, worked on a lot. And I think that's kind of clear after the fact that I really got into that a lot, as you know, in those 2 years that I was there.
And while at the Institute, obviously you have some great mentors there.
Yeah.
Some of the biggest names in the genre in jazz: Herbie Hancock, Wayne Shorter, Terrence Blanchard. Anything that one of them might have said to you that helped sort of ease you one way or the other? Any one piece of advice?
Yeah. The first thing that comes to mind is you know, Wayne Shorter, who's I say this a lot about him. He's somebody who you know, he has this wisdom of, you know, age old wisdom, but he you know, speaks like a child, for lack of a jazz pun, Herbie Hancock jazz pun. But he'll do and say things that a child would do, a young person would say or do, but it's so simple, but it's so profound, you know. And there's so much in what he says and so much in what he doesn't say. So he, during the time that he was working with us, he had this line that I actually used in some lyrics that I wrote for one of his songs, Juju. But he said, he was talking about perfectionism and people that strive for, you know, it has to be the best, and they're never satisfied. And he said, you know, a lot of people spend their life searching for gold, but there's a lot that you can do with silver, and even more that you can do with tin. And I was like, yeah, you know, and it's something that it's great, and it's actually really deep, because it's like, yeah, basically, you know, what you have to work with is right in front of you. Mm-hmm. And yes, you know, it's striving for perfection and having that kind of mentality where you're always working at your top of your game and working very hard is great, but not to overlook what's right in front of you.
Wouldn't help it, no, 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 no on my finger, softly while you sigh. Love came and possessed you, bringing sparkles to your eyes. It's like a trip to heaven. Heaven is the prize, and I'm so glad I found you. You're an angel in disguise, and I can't help it. If I wanted to, wouldn't help it. Even if I could, I can't help it. If I wanted to, wouldn't help it. No, I can't help it. If I wanted to, wouldn't help it. Even if I could, I can't help it. If I wanted to, wouldn't help it. No.
It's One Track Mind on a Friday night. Christy Lomax, 90.7 FM, KPFK. My special guest is Miss Gretchen Parlato, chatting up with her about her career and this wonderful album, which is out now on Oblique Sound, called In a Dream. This is track number one on the album, and it's a cover of a very popular Michael Jackson tune, written by Stevie Wonder, of course. I Can't Help It. And my question is, well, the entire album features a lot of covers, your renditions of very, you know, sort of popular tunes. This is more in the R&B realm, but certainly you've got some classic tunes here by Herbie Hancock, Butterfly, Dorival Caymmi, Dora Lisi, Wayne Shorter himself, ESP, Duke Ellington. With these artists in particular, and considering their vast catalog, how on earth did you get this? How did you get to choose, or how did you decide on these particular songs from each of these artists? Like, what? How did you do this?
Well, that's the great thing about them. You know, they have so many songs to choose from that, you know, I'll never have a lack of material to grab, you know, if I am going to do something that's not my own. But, you know, everything, I've gotten to a point in my life where I feel like everything is has to be very thoughtful, and I have to be very connected to every song that I sing. So I might be attracted to the song based on, you know, the melody, a beautiful melody, a beautiful, you know, chords and harmony, or maybe the lyric is just, you know, just so profound. Like the Duke Ellington song, for example, Azure, is kind of a lesser known Ellington piece, and the words are just so, they're just so beautifully sad and dark, but there's beauty in it, but it's really just this specific moment of feeling like completely alone, and you're just sitting there in your kind of, you know, depressed state, and all you want is this one person, and it's just like, here I am all by myself. And, you know, it's said in a much more poetic way than what I just said, which is the whole point of why my name is not Duke Ellington. Or wait, he didn't write those words, did he? Let's do our homework. We'll see. We can look it up. I don't think he wrote lyrics.
It was, let's see.
Let's look, up.
Let's look it up. It's, the credits are Duke Ellington and I. Mills.
Right, Irving Mills.
Irving Mills.
Okay. So there you go. They're classics for a reason, is the point. You know, so it might be a lyric that's just like, oh my goodness, that's, I know what that feels like, or I have a story to tell behind that. So, you know, having my own, you know, story behind every piece, whether that's something that I wrote or something that has been sung, you know, a million times. The same thing of just having some connection to it.
And so it's just sort of coincidental that they all sort of, at least title-wise, fit thematically with the album In a Dream, the album title In a Dream.
Yeah.
Because even in that depression. You are sort of in a dreamlike state.
Exactly. You hit it on the head, and that's funny to point it out, because I wanted the album to, I titled it In a Dream after a song that I wrote called In a Dream. I wrote the lyrics for it, and Robert Glasper wrote the music. So I just thought, in this dream state just seems fascinating to me, of, this dream state of like the obvious sleeping state and an awake state. But then the memory state is sometimes very similar to a dream. Sometimes you have a memory of something and you think, did it
happen
really
that way?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Or was that a dream? Or mm-hmm. even, 10 minutes ago, it's like driving here. It's like that memory in my brain is the same thing as a dream, or when you're completely in love and just on cloud nine, it's very dreamlike. Or like we're talking about in this, like the lyrics of Azure, where it's, you're just sad. You're just feeling like you're alone. That's a dream as well. So, it goes on and on. Even death, you could say that, light, when you're alive, it's a certain state, and when it's a dream, and then you actually,
transition
are born into, right. into death. So whatever your beliefs are, it's a fascinating thing. So what's funny about that is that, the lyric, I didn't really choose all of the songs based on the fact that they were dream-like songs or had a dream in the lyric. But Aaron Parks, the pianist on the CD, pointed it out to me, that he's like, almost every song here has the word dream in it. Did you do that on purpose?
Mm.
And I was like, oh, wow. Actually, I didn't. But that's makes perfect sense to me that it would, fall into place like that.
You could be attracted to a lyric. You could be attracted to a melody as that's the sort of the main impetus to get you to do the song. And then how do you find your way? Take the Michael Jackson song, for instance. How do you find your way into it to reinterpret it with this sort of bossa nova, this light feel? How did you get from what we all know or most people know to that?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the thing. The classic version of that song is just, it is almost untouchable. I'd say it's untouchable, but I wanted to touch it, so I did. But it's really like, it didn't need anything, It was just, it's so, the second you hear that, it's like, oh, there it is, And so it has that feeling to it, but it's such a perfect song that I treated it just like any other song that I love, where it's like, oh, okay, I love this and I would love to sing it. I would love to, tell my story with it. So what can I do? And to me, it's not about, trying to sound anything like the original. It's
sure.
taking it and doing something different with it. And not for the sake of being different, but just for the sake of the fact that I am different, that I'm not Stevie Wonder or Michael Jackson or anyone else, that had anything to do with that recording. So actually I first started to sing that back when I was at UCLA, and I used to play that with a guitarist who he lives here. His name's Marcel Camargo. He's from Brazil, and we used to play a lot together. So I brought that song to him, and we used to do it as a voice guitar duet, but much more traditional, like you kind of mentioned, bossa nova. It's much more traditional sense. So to me, that was my way of interpreting the song, of just let's break it down and take and kind of strip it to its purest essence and get to the core of what that song is. And then everything that I add onto it will just be from my own, life. And then carrying that on, once I met Lionel and started to play with him, I had the same idea of like, oh, this would be a great piece to do with him. So, of course, anything that he does is not going to be, traditional in any sense. So the way that we've done that song really just grew from us, performing the song together. And I didn't have to say, and I didn't tell Lionel what to do. He just, his interpretation of playing that, the changes in this chart, so to speak, was for him, to do what you've all heard. And it's always just grows every time we perform it. It's something, new and exciting, and it's a perfect song. So I just wanted to do something with it, honor it,
Well, I love what you did with it, but even more than that, the song that just had me floored when I first heard it was Weak, and what you did with this 90s R&B song by SWV. I mean, your interpretation of it, while very jazzy, also had a little bit of an electronic feel. It sort of felt a little broken beat, the way you sing it and sort of chop it up. Let me just let people, you know, hear this for a bit, because this is awesome. I mean, I didn't even recognize it at first.
Oh,
I had to look at the, I was like, is this sound?
That's exactly what I hoped. And I'll explain, you know, the collaboration afterwards, but that reaction is exactly what I was hoping for.
Tanya, that is a brilliant interpretation.
Oh, thank you so much.
What is that in five? What's the time signature on
it's
that? Fun.
It's actually it's three. One, two, three, one, two, three.
Wow.
Or you could think of it kind of the phrasing in this section is kind of like six, which is three. But it's three.
Wow. Well, you said you were saying off mic that you and Robert Glasper work together on the arrangement of this. Like, so who brought the track to who?
I have always loved this song. I was in high school when this song came out. So, you know, when you're in high school and this is like top of the charts, the song was everywhere. So I always was a huge fan. And it's again, it's just one of those songs that's just so well-crafted that I thought, I want to do this. I want to sing this and do something with it. And I'd met Robert when I moved to New York, and I knew that he would be a great... I'm just watching you bob your head. That's good. I just knew that he'd be a great person who would obviously know the song and know how to honor it, but also do something new with it. So I told him I wanted to sing it, and I always tell this story the same way. He laughed after he stopped laughing and was like, wait, you want to sing this song? He was like, for real? And I was like, yes, come on. So, you know, we got together, and he came up with this, the vamp, the whole, how the intro starts, and realized that I could sing, just came up with a vamp where the chords were different, but I could still sing the same melody in a very, you know, simplified way. Cause obviously I'm not Coco. I can't do all what she does. But you know, the same way I did, you know, I thought of with, I Can't Help It, where you don't sing all of Michael's licks and his runs, but you simplify the melody to, you know, probably what the purest and most simple way to do it and go from there. So, yeah, Robert came up with this vamp. And I think he's just good at that. He's good at hearing, different kind of harmony, very unexpected, but also, you know, he comes from a place where he's just going to know what works and what is going to feel good, you know, and what's going to, I keep saying the same thing, honor the song, really, because that's really what you want to do when you cover something, you know, because there's, every once in a while I'll hear little, I'll see, like, you know, on YouTube, and I won't have posted the song, but someone else does, and then there's the comments of like, oh, who is this? This is nothing like the original. The original's so much better. And it's fine for people to have their opinion of it, but then you hear YouTube comment fights about it of like, well, it's not about better, it's just different, and you don't even know anything, and da 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 da. And you know, then it gets some horrible racist comment.
Right, comes out of nowhere.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy, but you know, everyone can have their opinion of it. But I think it is a little bit touchy when you cover something, a song that is so classic. Is really, it's not doing a song to change it and to do it better. It's to honor it and to just, you know, do something different with it, and that should be okay, in my opinion. You know.
Well, speaking of classic. I don't know how much more classic you can get than Rufus and Chaka Khan.
Oh yeah,
working with DJ Center.
On that
track. I remember when I was told that, you know, there was a Chaka Khan cover. I was like,
I know, and I had the same reaction. This was this was my karma coming back, because this was the opposite of the week thing. Of this idea was all DJ Center's idea, and he's like, I have this you know, Rufus and Chaka track that I want you to do. And I'm like, me singing Chaka Khan? I was like, I don't know. And I was hesitant. I don't know if he even knows that I was hesitant, because I kind of played it cool. But I was like, okay, let me hear it. And so it was really, you know, I wanted to be very careful at you know, my presentation of it. And, you know, basically it's the same thing. It was simplifying that melody, because I am not Chaka Khan. I can't do that. You know, I can't, and I'm not going to attempt to do it. It's not going to sound good if I do. But
well, I talked to Center today just to find out, you know, give me some backstory, give me a scoop on the recording of the song. And he did say the first thing she said was, "You don't want me to sing this like Chaka Khan, do you?"
I know. I'll do a good impression, but, you know, I don't know if, yeah, anybody would like that. Yeah.
But, well, that's, you know, that's certainly one of the things that I appreciate about the covers that we've talked about here today, is that you certainly have found your way into them. And certainly someone with the kind of dexterity and flexibility that you have, the technique, it would be obvious for you to do your own thing and not try and belt it out.
Yeah, that wasn't going to work. And you know, it helps coming from, that's where the, you know, jazz education really helps, because it makes it so that you treat these songs as if they were just a standard. So, you know, a standard in jazz repertoire is a song that's been sung much more than even any kind of pop song. It's like these are songs that are 100 years old by now, and that and they've been sung, you know, thousands of times, millions of times. So everybody's, you know, like you think of how many times somebody has sung, you know, Round Midnight, where there's a lot of classic versions of Round Midnight, and there's maybe it'd be debatable whether what's the classic vocal version of Round Midnight or instrumental version. So if you think of it in the same way where these songs are, they are not untouchable. They're touchable. Anybody can sing them and do their own thing with them. So I used that same approach to these songs of like, these are just, you know, classic. This is classic material. It's standards of our time, really. And so we have to treat them that way and honor them in that way, but definitely move it forward and, you know, breathe new life into these songs, even if they are, you know, a classic being, you know, 10, 20 years old. It's the same thing.
My guest in studio this evening is Gretchen Parlato. She is here to talk about her wonderful voice, her album, In a Dream. This is her second release, her first for Oblique Sound. She's actually going to be appearing on Monday at Catalina, right?
Yeah, Catalina. Just one set at 8 p.m.
One set at 8 p.m., but I'm enjoying this conversation, so I think we'll continue it just a bit more, and then we'll get into the dance mix. So people, have no fear. You'll get your house music, but I do have a couple more questions for Gretchen.
This is how they can stretch out to this part of the segment.
Exactly. We're going to take a break, come back, get you to hear the Chaka Khan, Rufus and Chaka Khan cover that she did with DJ Center. So do stay with us. It's 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 FM Santa Barbara, and for the world at www.kpfk.org. We'll be back with more of One Track Mind right after these messages.
Tune in, turn on to music with Spaceways Radio on its new day and time, Sundays from 10 p.m. to midnight, here on KPFK, 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara. We're broadcasting all the way around the world at kpfk.org.
As the bus leaves the town behind and heads for the country, everything begins to change.
Space Radio.
Well, almost everything.
Sundays from 10 p.m. to midnight, your sure shot for psychedelic love music and a variety of classic and obscure recordings from around the world.
And already the magic is beginning to work.
Thank you.
I think we won you over some new fans with that one, Gretchen.
I hope so.
It is from the album by DJ Center, which came out a few weeks ago, Everything in Time. It is their collaboration on the Rufus and Chaka Khan tune, You Got the Love, featuring my special guest, Gretchen Parlato. Nice vibe on that. Really nice vibe.
Thank
you. The other thing that I like about your voice and your music is the fact that it fits so well across these other genres. So we've got the album, of course, has, you know, more traditional jazz stuff, a couple of the R&B covers, the work you've done with Self Scientific and DJ Center. It's sort of, you know, you're going to reach, or you have the ability to really bring two worlds together. Mm. You know, sort of the new the R&B folks who never really touch jazz. Mm-hmm. You can have those folks at your concert, and then the, you know, I don't know how much of your audience is sort of the upper crust, the old school jazz audience. But, you know, you get to bring them to expand their minds a little bit more.
Yeah.
And that's really great, because your voice, it really works in electronic. Mm. And
thank you. I mean, I'm following a path. I feel like it's, you know, it's already been kind of tread upon by plenty of other singers, you know, and collaborators, where they know, they can hear that something might be very opposite and laughable at first, of like, wait, how is this going to work? But somehow, by putting different kind of sounds together and textures together, that, you know, like my voice being very pretty light and more of an intimate sound than someone, for example, like Chaka Khan, but still with the, you know, the heaviness and the groove to what DJ Center did, there's something about that, you know, that seems to work. So it's not about changing what you do for, you know, if I were to sing you know, a jazz piece or a Brazilian piece, or to sing with the DJ, it's not that I would change my voice to sound a certain way for a certain genre. It's all about trying to just have your own, you know, signature kind of unique, honest sound, and then having that work with all kinds of other music. And yeah, the end result can be, you know, can just open up people's minds.
And so your show that you're doing Monday at Catalina.
Yeah.
It's one show. It's 8:00.
Right.
And will you be doing some of these covers as well? Are they always in all of your shows, or?
I haven't done any of these, you know, these more hip hop kind of R&B. Well, the hip hop stuff I haven't done, like DJ Center's thing, or with, you know, Self Scientific stuff. That's a separate thing. But with my gig, we'll definitely do the stuff from the album. So you'll hear Weak, you'll hear I Can't Help It, and you know, I have some original material that I've composed, and other collaborations of that I've worked on with other musicians. So it's basically my own project is, you know, what you've heard on both of my albums, and what you will hear on albums to come. You know, so it's kind of a mix of some jazz, some Brazilian, some, you know, even some African influence of, you know, collaborating with those kind of artists. And I don't know what it is. It's just hopefully you like it. Or if you don't, that's fine.
That's fine, too. Center thought you did on your first album, which is just self-titled, right?
Right,
Gretchen Parlato.
Right.
He thought you did a Bjork cover. Is that true?
That's true.
Which song did you cover there?
A first called Come to Me. It's on her album debut. So this was actually similar to, you know, the SWV song. It was in high school when that album came out, I think. Yeah, I was in high school. And so that was, Come to Me was a song that I'd always loved and thought I want to do something with this. This is a great song. So, again, Bjork is signature. You can't try to imitate Bjork and sound like Bjork if you're going to cover her. But it's very common for jazz artists to cover Bjork. Somehow, it's very common. Bjork, Joni Mitchell, you know, Radiohead. These are very common. For jazz, for instrumentalists and some singers, but a lot of instrumentalists. But yeah, the point of that, I think, is knowing that there is an original version, there's a classic version, and not to, you know, try to emulate that, but just to take something from it and, you know, make it breathe your own life into it. Not really make it your own, but just make it, something, treat it like a standard, you know.
And so other than touring around with In a Dream, what else do you have coming up? Are there any other projects in the works?
Well, I'm always, I'm in a few different people's bands. There's a great pianist who I play with a lot named Taylor Eichstee, who he has a group that has another singer, Becca Stevens, who's... Look out for her. I'll say her name now. People might not know, but you will know of her very soon. She's incredible singer-songwriter. So we both sing with Taylor's group, and I'm blanking on all the stuff I've done. There's lots of different, sometimes more instrumental projects that I'll do where people will have me sing, wordless melodies or sing something in unison with another instrument. So tapping into my, Thelonious Monk Institute days. But I'm, I live in New York, so there's all kinds of projects that are based out of New York. Mm-hmm. But the touring that I'm doing coming up is, to support In a Dream. And hopefully, at some time soon, it's already time to think about, the next album and, get that out there too. So always working on, more music and trying to write more, because I've written a handful of lyrics and collaborated with other instrumentalists on their music, but actually writing a complete piece of music on my own is a newer thing, so I'm trying to do more of that.
Any seeds of ideas on themes? Anything not, that will hold you to, but just floating around?
Yeah. I do have this idea. There's a fantastic saxophone player. He's in town. He might even be listening. His name's Dana Stevens, and he was in the Thelonious Monk Institute with me. So we bonded there, and he's, I think, playing at Cafe Metropole. He was playing tonight and tomorrow night, so people can hear him. He lives in the Bay Area. But he, there's a song of his called The Lost and Found it's an instrumental piece that I wrote some lyrics to. And the whole idea of lost and found, I'm really drawn to, and I might be speaking too soon, but I'd like to have that be the theme of the next project, where In a Dream was kind of the idea here. And Lost and Found, I'm resonating with that. Just in you can feel that way in life, up and down, where it's like, oh, I've got it now, I figured it all out, and then something will happen that just like completely sweeps you the other way, and it's like, oh wow, I have absolutely no idea how life works, and I don't know anything, it's knowing something, knowing nothing, and just that cycle of being lost and being found. So I think is kind of deep. So I'm going to tap into that.
You might play around with that.
Uh-huh.
Well, Gretchen, it was definitely a pleasure speaking with you this evening. I am, a new fan of your music. I'm going to make sure that I go out and get your first album. Now I'm really psyched to hear what you did with the Bjork cover. But again, it's Gretchen Parlato. The album is called In a Dream. It's on Oblique Sound Record. It is available everywhere. And she'll be performing at Catalina on Monday, April 5th. Mm-hmm. One show only at 8 p.m. Gretchen, any shout outs before you peace out of here?
Oh yeah. Well, I gotta say hello to DJ Khalil. I think he's listening from Self Scientific and James and Dan and all my LA people and anybody, let's put it that way, anyone who knows me that's listening, hi. How are you?
Oh, you know what
Thank you.
You're so welcome. But you know what? PSS. I saw this thing online for the Institute, and I was just curious about this as it pertains to your time. I was looking at the requirements for the vocal competition.
Okay.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
That you later went on to win,
yeah,
right, in 2004. and it was a requirement. So I was just curious about this.
Sure.
It looks like it's 5 separate pieces of music you have to submit for this.
Yeah.
Or did I interpret it wrong?
Oh, no, you're right.
Do you remember what you did for each? Do you remember? I was going to ask you.
Yeah.
Do you remember what your 12-bar blues of your choice with your choice of accompaniment?
I know that people, like my friend Dan listening, I'm sure he knows because he works at the Institute. What was my blues? You know, it was probably, it could have even been something like Centerpiece, which is like my fallback blues head because it's something that I learned in high school. But it could have been, no, that's not true. You know what? I can't even remember. It could have been some like bebop, like some Charlie Parker blues head, I think. But
what about your up-tempo performance of a jazz standard with the quartet?
With what?
With quartet.
Oh, okay.
These are all of the requirements that you had to enter this Thelonious Monk.
It's very specific.
Institute of Jazz.
Okay, let's pretend it was like a bebop kind of bass blues head, but the up tempo, I think I did Get Out of Town. I did Cole Porter kind of up tempo, medium up tempo version of Get Out of Town.
What about your medium tempo performance of a jazz standard or medium tempo Latin Brazilian composition with trio?
Oh, I'll bet that was probably Chega de Saudade. It was probably Jobim.
Okay.
I'm just going to guess at this point. I'm not sure. But that's probably what it was.
A ballad performance using only one accompanying instrument of a jazz standard, a portion of which must be sung.
I'm not even reading this. In tempo. Yes, I know. I know these. Very well. That was Prelude to a Kiss, and I did that with just piano. And for the portion that was a cappella in time, we just kind of went to the bridge. We did a whole chorus and then went back to the bridge, and I sang the bridge in tempo but without accompaniment, and then went back to the last part of the song. You know, they want to know that you can keep time without anybody else playing with you and also stay in tune. You know, it's good stuff.
And your modern song, original song, or non-composed section, example, free improv of your choice,
which is
interpreted with a jazz aesthetic with accompaniment of your choice. I looked at this thing. I was like, they, you know, as it should be. I mean, Thelonious Monk's name is attached to it. I mean,
yeah.
Of course, I'm being cheeky, but I was like,
no, you
wow.
know what? That's a good, well, that's a, I like this category. And I have a feeling that was newer. I'm not even remembering what I would have done there if that was on there. Because I like this category because nowadays a jazz singer is so, you know, it's such a broad term that there's a lot of singers that, yes, they can sing a standard and sing, you know, their booty off with that standard. But they also have they have original music that they do, or they have other kinds of genres that they are influenced by that they bring into it. So I think this little extra category was a way for them to hear, like, what's your kind of signature sound? If it doesn't happen to land in these other 4 categories, you know, maybe you're like an R&B kind of, you know, style, you know, tinged jazz singer, or maybe, you know, it's you have a crazy modern, you know, instrumentalist kind of, you know, style. Whatever it is, I think they wanted to see, like, okay, there's something open and there's an option for you to kind of do your thing here. But, you know, it's basically, though, I mean, this is a serious jazz competition where it's not really so much about, the original music. It's about being original in a jazz setting, so to speak.
Gotcha.
But definitely this is, you know, it's a great competition. It's vocals this year. So I recommend, you know, any singer, I would say it's a jazz competition. So if you're a serious jazz singer, absolutely go on their website and look it up. Or, you know, you can email me and ask me any questions, or I'll be happy to, you know, you know, talk you through it. But it's a really, I mean, it'll change your career. It'll change your life if you are a part of it in any way, because it's huge. So I'm thankful for that.
Well, thanks again for stopping by and hanging out. It's been a pleasure.
Oh, no problem. I appreciate you having me. Thank you. It's a pleasure.